Curry for setting a screen.
Because of physical play, although Jordan Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Izzo's dying for a moving screen.
It's that dreaded moving screen.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Moving Screen podcast with Brendan Quinn and Dylan Burkhart. Had a little snafu there to start the day. We're rolling now. Dylan, how are you?
I'm doing great this morning. Got a working refrigerator, supposedly. Life is good.
Big moves.
We're making big moves in March.
Postseason is underway. Hawks about to tip off here against LaSalle in 20 minutes. March Madness. How about it, man?
I'm ready to go. We got Michigan, Michigan State back-to-back. This is the week the moving screen exists for, I would say.
This is true. Do you feel like it is, like, genuine juice, or do you feel like we're having to kind of manufacture things a little bit, even like down to the fan base, just because things are so different?
Genuine juice. Illinois had some genuine juice from whatever they were drinking last night. I would say that. I think there's some genuine juice. I think it's sort of this in-between phase before the conference tournaments, but I think once conference tournaments start, things are going to feel a little more normal. I think that the fans being missing for those games will actually matter less than in the regular season, right? It's one thing if you're playing Michigan, Michigan State in an empty building in the regular season, but people don't know, like, those early games are not like they're like jam-packed with fans, and they're still great games. So I think I think we'll get there with some of those. Like the best NCAA tournament, I think there'll be a lot of upsets in the NCAA tournament, mm-hmm. because I feel like a sleepy gym is sort of what leads to those games more than anything in a lot of situations, right?
Yeah, I mean, the perfect situation is the sleepy gym, right? Where you get the first, like an early game, mm-hmm. where the first half, right? Because there's nothing in the building, the underdog is able to hang around for the first half. Then people start showing up during the second half, automatically root for the underdog, and then you get the upset. Yeah, I mean, I've just been trying. I was thinking about this last night on my drive home, like, what would this week be like in normal circumstances? Like these back-to-back games, obviously this wouldn't have happened in normal circumstances, but, you know, would it be that much more, I don't know, anticipation, kind of, you know, rivalry talk and all that stuff? It just seems like everyone's just kind of, all right, you know, Michigan, Michigan State, let's get these games in.
The circumstances are a little different, right? Like, you got to think, the last few times Michigan and Michigan State have played, especially 2 years ago, like, those are some of the biggest top of the standings, whatever. Like, those games are all in for two or three years there. Now, like, everything's right there for both these teams now. And I'm not saying this is not a big back-to-back series, but it's not like, what was it, 2 years ago when they were both, like,
I said those were unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's part of it. I've had a harder time watching, like, a random non-Big Ten game on a Tuesday night this year, I feel like. So I do think that might be where some of the
– right.
Maybe I need Nebraska in my life, so I just always choose those games. But who knows?
Have you put up a memorial to Teddy Buckets in the house?
It's called Wins. We're going for 13th place here on the Nebraska ball bandwagon. And sometimes you got to kick Teddy Buckets off the bandwagon.
All right. What is on UM Hoops – that I have not gotten to it this morning, but I
content,
look forward to reading what you've done
to
and your preview content.
Everyone wants to read about last night's game, right? No, but we have some,
according to my numbers, no.
Some debrief about last night's game, kind of trying to look at what Illinois did, what it could mean for Michigan going forward. It's funny because everyone asks, like, the number one mailbag question at this time of year, what's the worst matchup for Michigan in the NCAA tournament? People don't really like reading about that as much when it actually happens in a game, but it's actually a pretty interesting data point just based on where we're at. So looked at that a little bit, and then the rest of this week, it's going to be all Michigan, Michigan State all the time.
Nice. Over on The Athletic, I wrote obviously about last night's game, the statement made by Illinois, kind of what, you know, the slap that Michigan took, and, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how they kind of respond. you know, obviously it won't take much to get up for the next game when you got Michigan State coming, but, you know, some interesting analysis there. We had Colton Pouncey up in East Lansing. He covered Michigan State's big win over Indiana. Great story on Aaron Henry. And I had a long reporting process finally come to an end with the publishing of a story on Imani Bates. It is about the school that his father created, kind of this family's journey, I guess, of trying to get a kid who was like basically slotted for the NBA 3 years ago, trying to get him across the finish line, and trying to control all of their controllables and trying to do something that I don't think anyone could really relate to. So this is not a Imani Bates is Kevin Durant story. This is trying to write about them as human beings and really complicated stuff. And they were nice enough to let me into the gym and sit down for an interview. EJ, at least, I did not speak with Imani, but we do touch on the Michigan State, the status of his Michigan State commitment. And later today, Nick and I are recording a whole pod on kind of the story and both the writing process and kind of, you know, what's there. So we're not going to spend too much time on it here on this podcast because of the Michigan State game.
Yeah, it was a really good read. I thought it was well done. You really captured, like, it's hard to sometimes put into perspective how complicated and nuanced so many of these scenarios are just across the board and what really is, like, it's easy to say, oh, okay, this is the best prospect, whatever. It's hard to think about what does that mean for a family's life, right? Like, and it's just interesting to see that and kind of the angles that go into it. I thought it was a great read.
A lot of rabbit holes in that story.
A lot of rabbit holes.
It's an interesting process. So I do hope that fans from both schools will take some time and read that, because obviously Imani is a Michigan kid, grew up right in the Ann Arbor area over in Ypsilanti. You know, obviously everyone who listens to this has known who he is for years. So I'd encourage you to take some time and read that if you can. All right, on to this episode. We're going to start off recapping last night briefly before getting into the matchup tomorrow night. You know, Dylan, I mean, you touched on it already, the mismatch that Illinois presented. I don't know if mismatch is the right word, or the matchup issues that they created, right? I mean, they did so well defensively. I thought they played with way more juice than Michigan. Michigan kind of got on its heels and looked shook and never really kind of got back on its moorings, it felt like.
Yeah, it's interesting because Illinois, like, previewing that game, it was really apparent that Illinois' defensive profile matches up pretty much verbatim with what Michigan wants to do. They have a giant anchor in the middle of the floor who can protect the rim. They play drop coverage around him. They prevent assisted field goals. They prevent three-point attempts. It's all the things that Michigan does to other teams. And I think it's a strategy that really hinges on having the biggest, baddest dude on the floor. And for basically every game Michigan has played this year, that's been Hunter Dickinson. Kofi Coburn is bigger, stronger, and more experienced than Dickinson. And he was really the first one to kind of stonewall Dickinson and kind of throw the game out of whack. Like, Dickinson struggled in the Minnesota loss, but that was more about handling double teams. Illinois was able to say, okay, we're not going to double. We're not going to help off shooters. We're going to dare you to beat us one-on-one on the block, or we're going to dare Mike Smith or Eli Brooks to beat us with kind of pull-up twos around the hoop. And that's sounds familiar because that's what Michigan does every game, right?
Yeah.
You go look at, like, all the assist numbers people are throwing out. We'll go look at Iowa's season this year. They've been racking up assisted field goals. Luka Garza's been getting buckets all the time, but he couldn't score against Michigan, kind of following a similar game plan. So I think the good news for Michigan is most people don't have a Kofi Coburn. It's March. Hunter Dickinson's been stopped one-on-one once. I don't think there's a lot of guys that are 7 foot, 300 pounds, whatever else that, I mean, that dude is a monster. And I think in a way, Illinois playing without Dosunmu has helped them a little bit, I think, over this last couple weeks, it's going to help them grow as a team. And I think it'll give them a little bit of an extra edge where, hey, we can really just play through the post. I think they did a good job of that. So that's where I start. It was that these two teams want to do the same thing, and Illinois just did it better. And that comes down to, I think, the personnel and just playing a better game.
What did you think of how physically they played Michigan defensively? Just like not even letting Michigan run its stuff. Like guys just even trying to move off the ball. Like they were just into guys' bodies, right? They were really physical. I don't know like how, right? That's kind of the way Illinois plays. I don't know how replicable that is for a lot of other teams, but it was just interesting to see Michigan try to play against that style, no?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the style more than just being physical is staying home on shooters, right? And that if you have to just glue a guy who's 6'5" to Franz Wagner and Isaiah Livers, how many times did either of those guys catch the ball in the spots they're comfortable, right? Like Isaiah Livers wants to catch the ball as the shake guy in the pick and roll coming up from the wing to catch the ball where he can shoot or attack. Franz Wagner, Jordan Sperber did a great video on Michigan and highlighted how he catches the ball kind of in those Spain ball screens right at the top of the key where he can take one dribble and get downhill. Mm-hmm. Franz was driving in this game. He caught the ball 3 feet outside the three-point line. He had to dribble twice to get into his move. That's not his game. So if you – the problem is Michigan creates all of that other stuff, all those advantage catches for Franz, for Isaiah, for Chandy on a catch and shoot. Those all come from – drawing extra attention, right?
Yeah,
you have to draw help in the post, and then you have 4-on-3 on the other side, or you have to draw an extra defender in the ball screen. If Mike Smith can't score out of those ball screens, or Eli Brooks can't score out of those ball screens, and Hunter Dickinson can't draw a double team in the post, you're basically left one-on-one to make something out of nothing, which isn't where Michigan is at its best.
It's interesting you brought up those options because there were times I was watching that game, like, I don't know nearly enough to have come up with anything, obviously. But, like, I'm sitting there like, man, I don't see the counters. Like, I don't even know what they're – like, what are the options right now? Did you have anything that was, like, kind of – you were, like, waiting for them to do differently in that game, both maybe in terms of what they were running and personnel-wise, whether it was go small or do something different? Because that – it did seem like it was 40 minutes of kind of – banging your head against the wall? No.
Yeah. And so I guess I'd flip it around. Say Michigan runs a very similar thing. What's the counter? I think it's a stretch big is the real counter for either of these, like Michigan and Illinois, that's where they're most vulnerable defensively, I would say, because of just having that big anchor in the middle. I do think they'll go back and they'll look, and there are probably adjustments you can make in the ball screen game. It's hard to make drastic. Like if you miss a read in the game, it's hard to be able to have that be identified, both coach, player, communicate it and get it implemented in a timely fashion. So I do think that Michigan kind of settled to like, they're never going to come back in this game by playing through Austin Davis on the block.
Right.
And it kind of just well, like, okay, well we can at least do that. So we're just going to try it, but you're never going to erase a lead doing that. Right. You're going to score at most 2-pointer. Austin is not really a great passer. So like if it was tournament game and all things mattered, like would you try going small? Probably, but we also haven't seen Michigan do that all year. And that's just a radical, like you're talking about playing what Franz and Isaiah at the 4 and 5 and just see what happens.
Right.
Is that a counter that you want to build up? Maybe. Are you going to use that in a regular season game? Probably not.
Right. Ideally, you would have tried that in January at some point or something.
Yeah, and it seems like that would be an all hands on deck. I do think Michigan's offense becomes so stagnated around trying to throw the ball in the post. And it's great to throw the ball in the post if you can score with ease, like Hunter Dickinson was doing in January against single coverage, or if you can draw a double team every time. But I just think, especially with Austin, like Austin Davis had a 35% usage rate last night when he was on the court.
Right.
You can play Austin Davis, but you don't have to play through him every time down the court. I just don't see the advantage to doing that. And I think it's kind of how they want to play, but against, he's not going to create an advantage. Like he's played really, really well. And he had 8 points and 4 turnovers. Right. I don't know what more you can get from that. So in short, I think the big lesson is Michigan's offensive success depends on establishing that advantage in the paint. And when you really depend on being the bigger, more athletic, more talented team to impose your will, it's tough when you run into a team that's bigger and stronger. And that's, I think Coburn is the number one, two, and three player in this game as far as his impact.
I mean, I will say, and this is kind of like narrative shit, but, you know, if I were Juwan and the staff, like, I would not be thrilled with how these guys handled being really flustered. Like, the level of frustration on that court was palpable. And, like, they got on their heels, and they stayed on their heels. Like, there was never a response in that game. And just a group that's this old, this experienced. And now, granted, they haven't had, you know, the COVID shutdown obviously was adversity, but they haven't really had that much adversity on the court, right?
Maybe the
Minnesota game, they were without Eli and everything was kind of wonky.
The Wisconsin game.
I was going to say the first half of Wisconsin, but it was also coming off the break. Like, it wasn't that unexpected, and they were just kind of feeling their way out. They were just, that looked like a team that was just trying to get its, you know, put one foot in front of the other and get going again. Other than that, you know, since like the Bowling Green game when it's Oakland overtime. Yeah, those first two games, you know, like it's been very comfortable season on the court, you know,
which I think it's probably in a sense helpful to, like, if you had that experience 2 weeks from now, your season's over and you're going home and wondering what the hell happened, right?
Totally. So, we both made that point at halftime that, like, this is a good thing to happen before the postseason.
I like, because that's what it's all going to come down to, is what happens 2 weeks from now. So
you
need a wake-up call. I think you'd rather lose a game where you were competitive and say, oh man, we can improve on X, Y, and Z. Like, it's one thing to just get beaten off the court. And I mean, Illinois wanted it. Trent Frazier, dude, was in Mike Smith's grill, and I think that really set the tone for the game. And it's just so funny because that's what Michigan's done, right? Sean D. Brown getting in another point guard's grill and kind of just turns the whole game. Mike Smith never got comfortable, and it was really, I think that is the game plan, right? Force Mike Smith to be Ivy League Mike Smith, not Big Ten Mike Smith. Big Ten Mike Smith wants to pass on two out of three ball screens and let the guys next to him win the game. Ivy League Mike Smith has to dribble around and shoot crazy baseline fadeaways and score 25 points. If you're going to beat Michigan, that's the Mike Smith you want to force to play. And Illinois did that. And Trent Frazier, one of the best defenders in the Big Ten, I would say.
Yeah, no doubt. That idea, like, the thing is that it's not making Mike Smith want to play that way. It's making him have to play that way,
yeah,
too.
It's not
like,
there's
just no other option. Yeah, I mean, they were just getting nothing, you know. I mean, what was the closest to the basket Hunter Dickinson even touched the ball? Every touch he had was 12, 15 feet from the basket, and he just doesn't play that way, you know. He will eventually, but not right now. And that was clearly the plan. He just couldn't move Kofi, and that just changed everything.
Yeah, and despite everything, I think Michigan will look back and be frustrated with his execution late in the first half and then with Dickinson's third foul, because a few possessions there go a different way, and it's a competitive game. Instead, I think Michigan had down to eight early in the first half or early in the second half, and Coburn had just committed his third foul, and then all of a sudden Dickinson commits his third foul and the game's basically over, right? So I think that's where you'll look and say, wow, Michigan's been so good in kind of that last four of the first half, first four of the second half, and they let the game slip away and got out-executed. So I think it's a learning experience. I don't think it's, oh, they figured out how to play Michigan and everyone's going to play this way. I think people would love to play this way, but it's a lot easier said than done.
I think one lesson that can be taken from this game is, you know, when it is, if when they are in a do die situation, you know, Dickinson on the bench with three fouls, and I'm not saying that this is why they lost the game by any means. Like, they got their shit kicked in either way. But, you know, if you're in an NCAA tournament game and he's got three fouls and there's 17 minutes left on the game and the other team goes on a 6-0 run, you have to put him back in. You just can't let that happen. It went from 8 to 20. In a flash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Michigan is going to struggle to get stops without Dickinson on the court basically for the rest of the year. So it just comes down to keeping him on the floor. You want to flip
let's touch on Aaron Henry
versus Indiana game.
Michigan State versus Indiana. Neither of us were obviously dialed in on that game. We're both kind of working on the Michigan fallout, but pretty clear. You know, Aaron Henry, not only in this game, but in the last 3 weeks, is doing some Herculean level stuff and is kind of willing this team to places that I don't think either of us had any thought of them finding here down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, he had that, a personal 12-0 run to win the game. That's
big time stuff.
Best player on the court. I think
on a court that had included Trayce Jackson-Davis.
Yeah, who was
no show
cursing out his coach in the the timeout huddle. So how does that go?
I don't think that's a good sign.
I don't think there are many good signs in Bloomington right now. I got a couple. This is kind of a wild box score, so just a couple stats to highlight here. Indiana was 5 of 30 on all shots that were not dunks or layups. I think it was a sequence. I think it was Al Durham had just a wide open three that
didn't
close to hitting the basket. And then Henry had that three that hit every part of the rim and went in. And that's sort of just one team is going home and one team is playing on and confident. I thought that was a really telling stretch. Michigan State shot 31% on dunks and layups, but 55% on other twos, which are basically all just Aaron Henry post-ups, ISOs, backdowns, and Trey Galloway and Race Thompson basically just can't defend a powerful wing. I mean, Michigan, like Franz Wagner really lit that combo up in a sense, and then just no answer for Aaron Henry. He was fantastic, and that's I don't know what else you can really hang your hat in if you're Michigan State, and finally they're getting to the point where Aaron Henry's using 30%+ of possessions, and he's getting the job done.
Yeah, 10 block shots for Michigan State. I didn't see the first half, but I mean, it was not a pretty game by any means. And it was clearly a game where, you know, Michigan State was pretty gassed. Indiana is pretty bad. And the team that had Aaron Henry won.
Yeah. Gabe Brown, those back-to-back threes. If I had MSUhoops.com, that would be in the 5 key plays. Easy money right there. That was huge.
Give the people what they want, Dylan.
I'm all for Gabe Brown minutes. And so what's going on with the Michigan State lineups? So I feel like Michigan State started this lineup at Indiana, went away from it to kind of change the whole season, and then started this lineup again, and then also didn't play 3 starters for more than 13 minutes. What's going on with the matching?
I didn't get it. I didn't get it at all, and I wasn't able to hop on Izzo's post-game call. He's actually supposed to talk today at 4:30. Big-time credit to Michigan State, by the way, for that 36-hour turnaround. Having availability with Tom Izzo is that's the way you do business. Michigan should take some notes. Started A.J. Hogard, started Malik Hall, removed Gabe Brown, removed Rocket Watts from the lineup. Watts played
16 minutes
and took
his 4 shots,
0 for 4, no assist. What has happened in the last 48 hours with Rocket Watts? I have no idea.
One interesting thing they closed with Henry, Langford, Hauser, Brown, and Bingham, right? Which is a lineup. I looked it up. They'd only played 2 possessions all season with that lineup on Hooplands before that.
Really? Wait, give me the lineup again.
So it's Henry at the 1, and then Langford, Brown, Hauser, and Bingham. So that lineup hadn't even hardly played, and then closed out most important game of the year, basically, for Michigan State. So that kind of speaks to just, you don't really know. I was thinking before this podcast, if we were going to go through and preview matchup by matchup, you don't know who can play.
No idea.
It's a complete crapshoot.
Right.
And I mean, it's good to have options, but it's just a fascinating dynamic that Michigan State has been on this streak and they're still playing new lineups, new combinations, and getting to the right end result. They've won six of nine, four out of five, right? Like, it's all kind of coming together here.
This is good. These are good questions for today's availability. Again, Michigan would have liked to have the same opportunity. So this group in the tournament with one more win or no?
I mean, if they win one of these
games, rehash this bubble convert one more time before getting into the next matchup. Do you think that they're good with at least just one win in Indy and safe?
It's just, I mean, there's too much. It's hard to know with everything else going on. If they beat Michigan, they're in. So just go beat Michigan, right? Like, that's
no doubt. No doubt.
You have back-to-back games. Second one's at home. That's exactly what you'd want to get one win. So just go do that. I don't know how the Big Ten tournament bracket's going to play out and whatever else, but I think it's not like they wouldn't have a chance if they just win that 8-9 game. But I mean, I think you'd have three tries in that case to beat Michigan. Just go get one and you're in. And they're playing like a team that probably thinks they can. So I don't know. What do you have? Do you reshape? Do you talk to Joey Brackett's? What's your take?
I did check out the beat with Nick Baumgartner and I. That was a fun conversation with Lenardi yesterday. My read is the same as it was earlier in the week, that if you want to go to bed uncomfortable on Saturday, but still potentially in the tournament, win one more game.
If you want to steamroll in.
If you want to go to bed happy, go to bed excited, ready, planning for Indy, right? Like, rocking and rolling, feeling great about yourselves, you know, win two games. Because a lot of bad things can happen, right? You got bid stealers out there, and if you want to let other teams control your situation, that's it. But I feel like Michigan State is kind of garnering positive vibes, right? Where, like, people are starting to look at them very differently. I mean, is the committee going to turn down the opportunity to have Michigan State, maybe Duke?
Oh, baby, the first phones four? Are ringing in that first four broadcast.
I mean,
I guarantee you that.
Solid gold.
Especially with the different schedule. Like, I feel like it's even more prime opportunity for those first four games to get all the eyeballs.
No doubt. No doubt. And then have either one of those programs as a 12, right?
Going if you're the
whoever, right? Duke, Kansas, or Michigan State, Kansas in a 5-12 game.
The move is to put Duke and Michigan State in opposite first four games, against each other.
No, of course.
Just to clarify.
Yeah. No, I 1,000% agree with that. All right, let's get into
one more thing on the NCAA tournament. Michigan State gets, like, every game that Michigan State plays is going to probably be a better opportunity than what a team like Duke plays in the ACC, right? So it's easy to, like, dismiss, oh, they might play Rutgers or whatever in the 8-9 game, but that's a lot better 8-9 game than you get in the ACC. And I think that is going to just really be a net positive for these like, it's just so much easier for Michigan State to make progress on the bubble because they're not playing they're playing quality games every time out because the Big Ten is so good. So I think that
good point
is something that we forget about, where it's like you downplay it, but a win over Rutgers or Maryland would be huge for Michigan State. All right, are we getting into this?
Yeah, let's get into the game of games. Michigan State, Chrysler, Thursday night. Projection from Ken Pom is a 77-62 win for Michigan. I do not think this will be a 15-point spread. and I don't think it'll be a 15-point game. What would be kind of your framework for setting this up?
Like, high level, Michigan State has struggled to defend a lot of the things that Michigan does well. But Michigan State was terrible in those areas in January and has improved, right? So Michigan State over the last month, Michigan State's gone from being like the worst post-up defense in the country to just a slightly below average post-up defense, which means over the last month, they've actually been a lot better, right? So I think it's hard to analyze this game in the framework of the season stats because Michigan State's been playing so much better over the last month and has improved in some of those areas. So like, I think that's kind of where I start. I don't think, I mean, the game comes down, I think it's pretty simple in a sense that Hunter Dickinson's presence in the middle is really where you have to start, right? Like Michigan State has to figure out a way to deal with him. I don't, is that one-on-one? Is that bringing a double team? What's your read on how
20 fouls, right?
Yeah, but I mean, Dickinson's not Kofi Coburn. He's not going to miss 20.
Yeah, fingers. But it goes to kind of with a conversation that we had about Kofi, I feel like on Monday, where it's play him that physically, use your fouls, and assume that a lot of them won't be called. So push his ass away from the basket, right? Play as physical as you can. Try to get him catching the ball in the same spots that he was catching it against Illinois. You know, that little spin move dribble from 12 feet, it looks a lot different when it's 5 feet and it's spin layup as opposed to spin two or three dribbles into traffic and, you know, a missed shot or a turnover. So use your bodies to move his bodies or move his body, I would think.
Yeah, and Michigan State still fouling more. They're 295th in defensive free throw rate, put up defensive free throw rate over 50% in the last two games. So, I mean, that's been the game plan. I that might contain it. I don't know that that's a long-term strategy, right? Like eventually, hopefully if you're going with that approach, you're like, well, maybe how many, draw a double foul or something else. But like, do you think it's single coverage?
Like how many long-term strategies are there when you're projected to lose by 15 points? Okay. You got to kind of go with what you hope works.
Does Michigan State go single coverage or double coverage on the block against Dickinson? Like, do they bring a double?
I think they'll go single coverage. I don't think they're going to want to leave Michigan shooters open or get into rotations.
Okay. That's a decision. I don't know.
I think you have a better chance of staying in it if you are in single coverage. I think you have a chance of getting your doors blown off if you start doubling and having Michigan start whipping the ball around, shooting open threes. You're talking about a team that's coming off of a very humbling loss that, you know, if they get going, they're going to look to inflict some pain. So I think you have a better chance of making it a 40-minute game by single coverage. Use those guys, use your bodies, and hope Aaron Henry can lift 1,000 pounds again.
Which Michigan State big do you like most in this game to defend against Dickinson?
I feel like Kithier has the best chance of pushing him because we've seen him do it and not a lot of other guys you have. But I do sneaky like Marcus Bingham's length as just a potential to at least make it uncomfortable. He's not just laying the ball up or taking these short hooks. Like Bingham can get his hand. He can at least disrupt shots and he can probably get his hands on some.
Yeah. I feel like Hunter has struggled more against like strength inside than length, but I don't know. That might just be after watching last night's game, right? But like the key to defending him is keeping him off his spots. Because if he gets you in his spot, he has the footwork to go and finish pretty consistently once he has leverage. But if you keep him a foot away from his spot, he struggles. So that'll be interesting. And that's where you start. I think you flip around to the other side. Aaron Henry is probably the best 8 to 12 foot shooter in the Big Ten, if not the country. He's shooting 47% of mid-range twos, and Michigan runs an entire system designed to funnel players into those shots. So
right.
I think that's where you flip around the matchup on the other side and how does Henry play against Michigan's length and how does that matchup play out?
Yeah, that I don't know. Do you have an idea of the best matchup there?
I mean, I think you put Franz Wagner on Aaron Henry and see where it goes.
I tend to agree.
I think that's pretty – I mean, the key is Wagner's length – impacting his shots around the basket, right? Like, and I think, I mean, Henry does a really good job with some of those stop, pivot, pump, and everything else, but like Wagner matches up well, I would say, in that it's just going to be how he plays, right? The way Michigan plays, the idea is force teams to make those in between shots, and Henry's as good at making them as anyone. So,
all right.
I don't know what, like, beyond that, I don't know where Michigan State goes to score.
I mean, you need a guy like Gabe Brown making shots, you know, like they're going to have to play really well in this game. They're going to have to steal some baskets. They're going to have to make free throws, right? They're going to have to draw free throws and kind of muck it up, I think. You know, they drew what, 30 free throws against Indiana last night, something like that. Like, if you're Michigan State, that's kind of the way you're looking to play this, right? You're not going to look to get out and go and win 78-75 over Michigan, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just score in general, not score in bunches or play fast. I'm trying to, like, how are you going to manufacture points? I think Joey Hauser's an interesting one. I think he's really he will struggle to defend Isaiah Livers, whose health is obviously an X factor here. But
absolutely,
Hauser at the five could actually give Michigan State something offensively, right? Because, like we talked about, stretch bigs are tough for Michigan to defend. You can dial up four or five threes for Joey Hauser and see how he shoots. On the other side, though, I don't think he's the guy to slow down Hunter. So it's one of those, how much are you going to give versus what you get, right? If you're going to try to play that mismatch. But I think you'll see that at times, just because I think you have to go smaller if you're Michigan State in this matchup to match up with Michigan defensively. But maybe I'm off on that. What do you think?
If Austin Davis is on the floor, sure. But Dickinson, it will just be a
no. I mean, at the four,
parade of N1s. Oh, at the four. I'm sorry.
Right? Like, can you play Hauser at the four against Isaiah Livers? I think you're worried about that. Whereas you would be more comfortable going with the small lineup with Gabe Brown out there or Malik Hall. Like, they match up better.
No, I mean, yeah, I thought that kind of four guard look is certainly your primary option here, I would think. I'm kind of curious defensively when you look at Michigan State matching up with Michigan, like, you know, they're going to watch that game film from last night and see what they did with kind of forcing Mike Smith into the situation that we were talking about earlier. Like, do you think that that's at all replicable here?
So this is something I struggle to figure out, right? It's not like Illinois just cooked that game plan up for Michigan. That's exactly how Illinois tries to play, right? Yeah. So all the things they did match their season-long defensive profile. Michigan State doesn't really play like that by default, right? If you look at their defensive three-point rate or their defensive assist rate, those numbers don't match up with a team that can really suffocate everyone else and prevent any sort of passing, right? So maybe, I mean, I'm sure they'll try. I haven't thought of Michigan State as, like, Michigan State is usually more of a kind of soft hedge ball screen team, like a show, than a, like, pure drop coverage where you're just going to park someone in the paint. I believe that's still kind of the case. But is it going to be as effective as a team that does it all the time and has Kofi Coburn? I don't know. I'm sure they'll try.
I would think so. And, like, you got to kind of dial up, right? I think, like, a Rocket Watts to say, hey, you know, this – look at how frazzled Michigan got when Trent Frazier frazzled Mike Smith. You know, like, Rocket, you can do this. You know, you are quick enough, you're strong enough, you can make things this uncomfortable for them. So, but who knows? Is Rocket even going to start? Is he going to play more than 16 minutes? I don't, like you said, I feel like you're kind of throwing darts when you talk actual matchups. Like, you can't really just pair, like, we went, like, almost across the board on that Michigan-Illinois matchup. This guy on this guy, this guy on this guy, this guy on this guy. You can't do that here.
Yeah. Like, so Illinois is one of the best paint teams in the country. They outscored teams by, like, 11 points per game in the paint. Michigan State gets outscored by 4 points per game in the paint, right? Like, they don't dominate the paint in the way that Illinois does. So maybe. But I just, like, I don't see the obvious answer to contest all those shots at the basket if you're Illinois or if you're Michigan State compared to what Illinois was able to do. Brad Underwood called them Mozgovs, where they wall up at the rim and don't block the shot. Like that. Mm-hmm. And they did a great job of that. So I also think Michigan State, like, I think offensive rebounding is an area where if you look at that game, you can say we have a chance here. Like, I would crash hard and that's a risk. Like, Michigan can get out and run in spots, but Michigan let Illinois off the hook early in that game by not closing out some possessions, and that's kind of what let the game start to tilt. And it was really across the board, like Franz Wagner missing box outs, Isaiah Livers missing box outs, guys in help, Hunter having to help means that the rebound on the other side is wide open. So I think that's where you'd look at an area where Michigan State would probably say, hey, let's crash hard. This is what we do. It's not like new for Michigan State to crash the glass. I also think just balls to the wall. Can we get two fouls on Hunter Dickinson in the first half?
No doubt.
We have a chance. And that's just that sort of tension I feel like has gone over Michigan games recently, where it's like Luka Garza, Hunter Dickinson, who's going to get two fouls first? The good news for like, I feel like that actually has hurt Michigan's offense, where I feel like they get a little obsessed with trying to get that second foul another big. So it might be good not to have that kind of laying over your offense, but Hunter Dickinson has to stay out of foul trouble. And it's no secret to anyone who's going to be getting ready for this game. So I think that's probably where you start your game plan. How do we get a foul on him? But who are you?
Yeah.
But how are you doing that is the question.
I think it's going to be that idea of physicality in all aspects. I think Michigan State is going to look to really get up and in Michigan and, you know, make Franz Wagner really uncomfortable, right? Be really physical with him. If I don't know who that is, is that going to be like a Malik Hall, right? Or something like that, or a Gabe, or like who guards Franz in this?
Aaron Henry.
You think Henry on him? I don't know.
Well, how would it not be Aaron Henry?
I wouldn't be surprised if Henry's on Livers.
As in, like, what's your thought process there? That seems wrong to me, but maybe I'm missing something. Like, to save his legs or to...
I mean, he's going to play 40 minutes. I don't know if you want your best offensive player guarding the best defensive player or offensive player in this game.
I don't know if your best perimeter defender, right?
Yeah, but I don't know if you want your best defender or best scorer in this game if you're Michigan State guarding the best scorer for Michigan.
I don't think you have the leeway.
Isn't that an old Beeline philosophy where you want your best scorers guarding the worst scorer on the other team, save their legs?
Yeah, but usually it's when you got like a Mo Wagner as your best scorer, and yeah, you're going to save his legs wherever you can, or a Nick Stauskas. But if you got a guy who can check, I don't know.
I mean, like a Henry guarding Livers is still, if you can hold Isaiah Livers to 7 points, I mean, it's not like one scores 25 and the other scores 15.
I think
they both average the same amount.
I think Aaron Henry's too strong of a defender to not be defending at the point of attack in this game, right?
That's fair.
You have to disrupt Franz's ability to get downhill and initiate offense and get to his spots. And if you let Franz Wagner get within 5 feet of the basket and get to all his little scoops and hooks and whatever else, I just don't think you're winning the game. So I think you have to put Henry on him, in my opinion. I don't really see, like, I guess, would you put Langford on him? I don't think that's a winning matchup. I think
you could put Hall on him.
Maybe. I don't see it. I think Hall's a much better fit to guard Isaiah.
It could even be a first half, second half situation too. Instead of asking Henry to check him for 40, you know, maybe get through the first half. I don't know. I'm just kind of spitballing more than anything. The matchup with Livers, then what would you think? If you want Brown primary on Wagner, what do you think for Livers?
Or you're putting Henry
your
or
scenario.
Brown?
I'm sorry. Yeah. I meant Henry.
So you think Gabe Brown checks Franz and Henry checks Livers? Is that what you're throwing out? I mean, it depends who's on the court.
I don't think Gabe Brown's going to be assigned to Franz Wagner. I think that would be an absolute disaster.
I think Gabe Brown could guard Isaiah. I think Malik Hall could guard Isaiah. I think Michigan needs to look to attack through Isaiah whenever someone like Hauser's on him, because I think he'll struggle on the perimeter. Those are the matchups that Livers really eats up. And Michigan State got away with playing Hauser down the stretch there at the four because Indiana keeps playing Race Thompson, who's just not going to, he's not versatile enough to really exploit a mismatch like that. So I looked for probably, I mean, Malik Hall hasn't really been playing all that consistently, which makes it tough to say, oh, he's going to be the answer there. So if Michigan State's going with four guards, I think it's Gabe Brown on Livers and Henry on Franz.
Okay, I'll buy that.
And then the backcourt is a little more interesting. Like Michigan's question with matchups is always, where do you stash Mike Smith?
Sure.
I think the answer becomes harder. Like, I think you can put Mike Smith on AJ Hogard because that's a situation where if Hogard's going to beat you, he's going to beat you. Probably on Watts. Is Rocket Watts going to just come alive and score 20 points? He could. We've seen it. It just hasn't really been there. The question is when you go with that bigger lineup and if like Henry's running the one, then where do you put Mike? So I don't know.
I don't know what you do with Mike in this game. I think that's a great point. You can't put him on Langford because he'll just try to go right at him and take those little short jumpers right over him. That'll basically be uncontested.
Won't you be okay with that? I don't know.
Well, maybe, but I mean, there's also, you know, that he can make that shot. Whereas, you know, Rocket would just be shooting threes or going straight downhill on Mike Smith. I think it's probably a better option.
I think we'll see. I don't think.
I agree. Anytime AJ Hogard's in the game, Mike Smith is in the game and on him and going at him probably on offense.
Yeah. The bigger question is, like, you put Watts' name out there, but is Watts that guy who can just take Mike Smith out of everything? He was that guy for the last few weeks last season, but seen that this year, right? And if he's not that guy, if Watts, like, is AJ Hogard, I don't know that. So defending Mike Smith the other way, I think, is a fair question to ask, too.
Because that one thing I want to bring up in this game. Juwan Howard, I feel like since like midway through last year, like has gradually got more and more and more into it and a little occupied with officiating. And there have been games where you like him just sitting there, right? And seeing like a Fran or an Izzo or whoever just work these officials and stuff like that, like, and not doing his own part on the other end. Like those days are over. We saw it last year, right? Remember he ran on the damn court at Breslin. I feel like this game does, like this game gets to him. I think he wants to beat Izzo. I think there is going to be this dynamic where both sides are going to be obsessed with the officiating in this game is going to be a prediction that I will have and stand by. I wouldn't be surprised to see both benches get texts. I think both of these guys are going to be a little just distracted with all that.
I think that helps Michigan State. Michigan State's far more comfortable in a foul fest. And when you get a game like that, where everyone becomes obsessed with the officials, it leads to a lot of extra whistles, and extra whistles help Michigan State exponentially more than they help Michigan, right? Michigan wants to play at starting five as many minutes as possible because they're by far their best players. Michigan State's got 12 dudes to play. They're like, well, we got someone else to throw in there. So the two teams set up very differently as in a game where the officiating maybe takes hold as far as a high foul count game. But the thing is, like, this weird situation where Michigan State fouls more than anyone in the country. Michigan fouls less than anyone in the country. People become obsessed with this narrative of, oh, the fouls aren't even, and then evening up the fouls. And that's what the coaches will be saying. But if you think about the logic of that, that helps Michigan State, right? So Michigan State ends up getting into a free throw fest, which is probably what it wants.
Right. Gets into a free throw fest. It gets extended minutes for Brandon Johns, right? Like that's what they want. And Michigan, what do they want? They want to do the same thing that they've been doing for 3 months. And, you know, it's going to be Michigan State's job to not allow that. So, I just think, especially in the last month or so, notably, I think like watching Juwan on the sidelines, like he has really been getting into it with guys. And I would not be surprised if it kind of, if things kind of bubble up here in this game. He had tech in this. How many techs has he gotten? So he got one at Iowa, I think last year, one against Iowa, right? He got the one when he ran on the court at Breslin, which was amazing.
There have been a few this year.
Last night, he got one. Did he get one in Atlanta? I don't think he got one in Atlantis. I wasn't there. But I don't know. I'm just something to keep an eye on. Like in the first 10 minutes, if you see both sidelines ranting and raving, I agree with you. That's advantage Michigan State.
If both teams aren't in the bonus in the first half, that's advantage Michigan, I would say. Right, like a low foul game, I think, helped Michigan. Michigan State just doesn't have a lot of guys who are great at making shots. So mm-hmm. a game that's kind of mucked up and lots of free throws, just that's how they want to play, and that's the approach. So that'll be something to watch.
And then the other thing for Michigan State is, like you said, like they got to make shots, right? If you have a game where you just go and shoot 37%, none of this matters, right? Langford, Gabe Brown, and Aaron Henry, like, need to shoot decent percentages, need to shoot the ball well, need to score. That's, you know, if we really want to dial this down in terms of how this can be a really good game, that seems pretty dependent upon that to me.
Yeah, you can't let Gabe Brown get open threes wherever, anywhere on the court. He's the one guy who can, like, you really worry can make three or four in a row, I would say. Mm-hmm. Langford can get hot, but he's not as consistent as he was earlier in his career from three. But so basically the thing about those guys, though, is they're not really like you can play on kind of a hard closeout on them because they're not really going to beat you getting to the rim consistently, I would say.
Right.
You say that's fair. Like they're not going to, like, Langford's going to dribble into a contested two, which you'll probably live with. And Gabe is just not particularly aggressive, I would say, getting downhill with the ball. So that's kind of like it's a scoutable game plan in that sense, where if you stick to your assignments and you close out on those guys, you're in a good spot. But and there's guys you can play off of from three. So Michigan's defense should set up well. I think it's just you have to be able to hold Aaron Henry to shoot 40% instead of 60% on all of his kind of ISO offense, I would say.
This dynamic, I assume we'll podcast on Friday. We'll try to.
Yeah.
But this dynamic of back-to-back games, what do you kind of think of that? It's going to be really interesting, right? Where do you get – there's like a week of prep or 5 days prep, whatever it will actually turn out to be of, you know, you're going to see one version, both teams are going to get an adjustment, and then get to do it all over again is fascinating. I can never remember anything quite like this. I mean, they've played close – before in a span of like 2 weeks, but back-to-back is obviously crazy.
And then they could play again the next week.
They could very well play in the 1-8-9 game in Indy.
My initial reaction would be to just bet the team that lost the first game to cover the spread in the second game, just because I just feel like that's kind of how the sport works. But I don't know how – I know other leagues have played a lot of these games at like lower levels just to help with travel and COVID and everything else. So I haven't really looked that closely at how it's played out, but I just assume it really helps the losing team. I think that would be my initial reaction, is the second game will go more to another direction, but I don't know. It'll be, I'm sure I can already see the narrative. If one team loses the first game and wins the second, the coaching mastery takes will be in full effect. But I also just think that generally teams come more closer, right? You're going to adjust. You're going to do X, Y, and Z. So I don't know.
I'd say if it follows any kind of, if there were going to be a script, it would be Michigan wins on its home court, clinches Big Ten championship. Michigan State comes back, upsets Michigan, punches its ticket to the NCAA tournament 2 days later, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're going to write it, that's what it would be. We'll see though.
Yeah. I think it works out very well. All things considered, I think if you're Michigan State, you'd rather play the second game at home, even though probably doesn't mean that much. Like, can we talk about road games? Like, if I hear one more coach get up and hype their big road win in an empty building. And it was so weird because the Baylor-West Virginia game before that game, there were like fans there, not a lot, but enough. And I was like, man, this is a different whole thing than these road games these Big Ten teams are winning. It's like,
I did think it was funny last night, Illinois touting it as the program's first ever win against a number two team on the road. I said, well, you know, I imagine they've played a number two team on the road a handful of times. There probably were more than 45 people in the gym, though.
It seems like we're just calling all road games, though, and as far as the NCAA tournament picture comes, which is a little wacko to me, but it's, I don't know, it's just crazy. Like, Michigan's win at Ohio State wasn't its best road win ever. I'll tell you what, there are people in the best road win ever. I'm not buying any of that.
I've been at Michigan road wins where I couldn't hear myself think. All of those count more than that one, I would think.
Yeah, even though...
You got anything? Do we want to do predictions?
Ooh. I'll just take a split. I think Michigan wins the first game, loses the second. But I reserve the right to change that if we record a podcast in between the games.
Fair. What's your prediction on the spread?
I mean, the Michigan-Illinois spread was 8.
I know. But that was after the IO news. It went from 6.5 to 8.5, right?
Yeah, but it was 7 or 8 points against the number 4 KenPom team. So I think it'll be a big number, something like 11 or 12 probably, right? Like,
it feels to me like it should be 8, but I agree with you. It'll be double digits somewhere.
The number 60 KenPom team against the number 2 KenPom team, the only reason you're saying it should be smaller is because – of the names on the jerseys, which is all fair. And I think that's the reason to bet the underdog in this case, but I don't know that how much that plays into it. I assume it'll open high and shrink because I think people will just bet Michigan State based on Michigan getting blown out and Michigan State playing well.
And it's could very well be one of those situations where, okay, Michigan State comes in, they've got good things going. Michigan just looked like shit against Illinois. You know, a month ago, even 2 weeks ago, anyone would have predicted like Michigan's going to run Michigan State out of the gym, right? I wouldn't be that. Would anyone be that surprised if that's actually how this ends up going on Thursday? That it's just a total boat race.
Like, Michigan State's lost games badly, so when
they're gassed, you know, and like that's not an excuse, but like
both
teams are gassed.
The team that loses always gassed. Like, Michigan fans complaining that Michigan was gassed. Well, Illinois have been playing the same type of schedule. So, I don't know. Everyone's tired. You got to go play.
Izzo out there saying Jack Hoiberg's going to get some run in this game.
Well, then maybe the spread needs to be higher. I think the question is, like, if Michigan finds some sort of comfort on offense, I just don't know if Michigan State has the horses to keep up in a shootout type of game, right? So I think that's what you need to figure out if you're Michigan. If you're Michigan State, it's just let's muck it up and make it ugly and then try to give us a chance to just put the ball in Aaron Henry's hands down the stretch, yep. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that'll be interesting if it comes down to if it's a game with 5 minutes to go, what happens then? Michigan has only been in that situation a handful of spots, and it feels like Michigan State has been playing for its life for 3 weeks. You know,
I'm excited. I like the back-to-back to end the season a little bit.
Me too.
I've always been a fan of when you have like an early game and a late game, but this sets up nicely. And I mean, it's easy to just predict both teams get what they want out of the weekend, but we'll see. Now you got the Hawks on.
Starting the broadcast. My bad. Hawks are up.
Uh-oh.
32-28. A little Big Five action today, right? On St. Joe's, LaSalle. Good stuff. All right.
You know what you're – you got your pom-poms under the table there, ready to go?
No, there's no pom-poms. It is good seeing my man John Griffin Jr., though, at this on the sideline there. Any other thoughts before we get out of here?
No, I'm excited for
– I'm pumped.
Thursday, and I'm sure all the takes will be completely rational and everyone will be completely calm over the next
100
hours.
Man, Michigan or Illinois fans are no joke. They run hot, man.
Well, I mean, the whole state seems to be running pretty hot. They are fired up about, I mean, and if Michigan and Michigan State split and Illinois beats Ohio State.
Oh, baby.
There might just be a brawl in Indianapolis when these if these two teams play again.
Is the Big Ten just going to keep the curtains drawn and just not say anything about anything? Or
I mean, they were quoted by the AP saying it's winning percentage, right? That article leaked out yesterday. Not a statement from the conference.
I didn't see this at all.
But an AP article saying that the Big Ten has officially stated that it would be determined on winning percentage. You good?
Yeah, we froze there for a second, but we're good.
All right, let's wrap this up before we have more internet issues.
Good call. All right, well, we appreciate everyone listening. Please be sure to subscribe to UM Hoops. Best time of the year. Dylan breaks it down like nobody else. Best in the game. Be sure to subscribe to The Athletic. We will have wall-to-wall coverage of all college basketball, whole NCAA tournament. Got writers all over the place. And do me a favor, read that freaking Imani Bates story. Oh, what a nightmare. having a story like that run and then not do well. Oh, boy. So thanks, everyone. We do appreciate you listening. We will be back Friday for part two of the Rivalry Pod.
Hey, we got Rivalry Pods all week.
Until then, tip the bartenders, tip the servers.